Okay, so continuing right along, I'm going to be talking about the role of stiffness in stochastic chemically reacting systems, and in particular our first solution to stiffness, the implicit tau leaping method. This is joint work with Morahan Rathenam, who used to be here as a postdoc. He's now in the math department at University of Maryland, Baltimore County. And Dan, and also I should mention my student Young Cao, who's been working with us lately, and of course with special thanks to John Doyle, who brought us together, and maybe more importantly, although he thinks that's the important part, brought us to this problem. Okay, so going all the way back to yesterday, I want to remind you about the multiscale problem in systems biology. In particular, yesterday, Hannah talked about the heat shock response in E. coli, where an estimated 20 to 30 sigma 32 molecules and an estimated 0 to 1 free sigma 32 molecules per cell played a key role in sensing the folding state of the protein and in regulating the production of the heat shock proteins. The problem is that the system cannot be simulated very efficiently at the fully stochastic level due to, we believe, two phenomena, which are both sort of multiple scales type phenomena. One of the places where multiple scales is showing up is in time. Okay, some reactions are much faster than other reactions. And the other place is in, I would loosely call space, but it's reaction space. Which comes about because of the presence of exceedingly large numbers of molecules of some species, not the sigma 32 species, but other species which are nonetheless important, but because their presence and their reactions and their presence in reactions control the slow changes of rates. Which you know, sort of keep the process going. And those molecules have to be accounted for in the SSA, which, as you just heard, simulates one reaction at a time. Okay, so just to bring us to where we are, kind of a quick synopsis. Dan talked about different kinds of computational models of chemically reacting systems. He started with discrete stochastic models. That's the finest scale of representation for well-stirred mixtures. And an exact description is available on that scale via the stochastic simulation algorithm. I'm not like John. I need to take like PowerPoint instructions from John, because I couldn't even get this arrow to move down a little bit so that it was like, this is the truth. So we are somewhere in between, somewhat lower than, we're going to be working right over here, okay, in between this level and the next level. Now the next level, as you know, is the continuous stochastic regime. That's sometimes called the Langevin regime. It's valid under certain conditions that Dan already expressed. And it's described by stochastic differential equations, or SDEs. And by the way, just answering your question, Dan is actually well aware of stochastic calculus and Ito and Sturtonovich integrals and things like that. But he's sort of too modest to give that answer. So this has been worked on a lot. It's not in, even this, I'd say, isn't in the same kind of state as, in terms of numerical simulation, which of course is what I'm interested in, as this bottom part, which is what I'm sort of expert in, continuous and deterministic regime, which is the reaction rate equations. It's described by ordinary differential equations, or if you prefer, differential algebraic equations. Requires a lot of molecules in order to do the averaging to make the model right. And of course, at this level, we have, you know, really, I would say, fairly fantastic software, you know, that given almost any differential equation system or DAE system, you know, you can just plug it into the software and it very efficiently, you know, decides which methods to use and how big of a time step it can possibly take and in order to get your requested accuracy and all that kind of stuff. Of course, we'd like to bring these other levels up these other scales of approximation to somewhere. I mean, our goal is certainly a level like that, but we are, to tell you the truth, a long way away from that. So we're working over here where we think there's a big hole, and we're going to have to fill that hole before we can. Of course, our goal is to be able to use any of these approximations. Here's tau leaping, of course. This one, tau leaping, the SDE, the deterministic reaction rate equations, on different reactions in the system as appropriate and in an automatic way. So that's a pretty ambitious goal. We're certainly not there yet. But I think, as I said, we have to resolve a few problems over here, and I think we're well on the way to doing that. Oops. Uh-oh, now I'm doing what Dan did. I don't get that. No, I'm all the way to the end of the talk now. Good, who said that? That's not very nice. Okay, so Dan already talked about the stochastic simulation algorithm, but that was 2 hours ago, and I'm just going to recap this. The big assumption is that we have a well-stirred mixture. We've got n molecular species, capital S1 through capital Sn. We're at a constant temperature in a fixed volume omega. We've got M reaction channels, if you I prefer calling it M reactions, R1 through Rn. The dynamical state is going to give, and this is in integer numbers, okay? These are the number, x sub I is the number of S sub I molecules in the system, okay? Unlike in reaction, you know, in deterministic world, these would be concentrations. Okay, again, the stochastic simulation algorithm notation, just to remind you really quickly, propensity function is given by small aj of x dt. It's the probability, given that we're in some state, that one rj reaction will occur somewhere inside of the volume omega in the next infinitesimal time interval, t, between t and t plus dt. When that reaction occurs, it changes the state. The state, not the estate. I would like that. The amount by which xi changes is given by nu ij. If you work in the deterministic world, you'll note that this matrix, nu ij, is the stoichiometric matrix. And it's the change in the number of si molecules produced by one rj reaction. So every time we have one of these reactions, we increment the number of molecules by the numbers that are in the nu ij matrix. Which are like minus ones and plus ones, and maybe, you know, two or something. And as we know, X sub T is a jump Markov process. Okay, so Dan already talked about the stochastic simulation algorithm in some length, so I'm not gonna do this slide because John asked me to speed up. I want to remind you about tau leaping because a lot of the stuff we're going to talk about has to do with tau leaping. So tau leaping goes like this. Given a subinterval of length tau, that now we've determined that tau. Or eventually what we like is that the computation decides on the appropriate tau. In the computation, we decide on the appropriate tau. If we could determine how many times each reaction channel fired in each subinterval, then we could forgo knowing the precise instances in which the firings took place. And in that case, we could leap from one subinterval to the next. And of course, how long could that subinterval be? Tau leap is exact for constant propensity functions. Thus, tau is selected so that no propensity function changes appreciably. And nowadays, Dan selects it so that this is in the sense of either the mean, neither the mean or the variance can change appreciably. I'm not sure that basing this on the propensity functions is going to be quite the most efficient thing to do numerically, and Dan and I have had a lot of discussions about that, but I think that's still sort of an open question. Okay, so tau leaping. It's based, as you saw, on a local Poisson assumption. We look at tau leaping like this, with a formula, a difference formula. So x at time n plus 1 is equal to x at time n plus nu, this is the stoichiometric matrix, times p, this is a Poisson variable with parameters a, the propensity function, and tau. That's it. That's the formula that increments the tau leaping. It agrees with the SSA in the small step limit, in the limit that this tau is the same as the time to the next reaction. It's equivalent to what's known in the deterministic numerical ODE world as the forward Euler method. In fact, not only in the deterministic ODE world, but also in the SDE world. This is a contention. The explicit nature of this scheme makes it inefficient for some problems which are known as stiff. Okay, so this is, right now, think in the deterministic world for a second. I spend my life on stiff systems, so I know what they are, but you know, not everybody comes from that background. So what is a stiff system? It's a system that, and I've like given like a whole week of lectures in a class on this, so if it seems a little bit nebulous, then, I only have like 5 minutes. So, if you're thinking like a scientist would think, how would you recognize a stiff system? It's the kind of system that has both slow and fast time scales, and this means a big gap between the time scales. And this is important, the fast scales are the ones that are stable. Okay? So, I don't know what else to say about that right now. Fast reactions, so if you're thinking like a chemist, when you see a stiff system, what you see is that fast reactions almost cancel each other out, while slow reactions determine the trend in the system. Okay? And this is just a consequence of this first fact, okay, that these fast time scales are whipping around, but they're all whipping the system into a slow state. Like, if you're thinking like a dynamical systems person, they're bringing them very rapidly onto the slow manifold. Okay, so explicit methods such as tau leaping, it's well known in the deterministic world that if you use an explicit method on a stiff system and with the kind of step sizes that would seem appropriate for resolving the slow scale, okay, which is the only scale that you really see in a graphical simulation because everything else has gone to that slow scale really rapidly, unfortunately, the step sizes that explicit methods need to maintain stability are dictated not by the slow scale, but by the fast scale. And that's because of the way that explicit methods use information from neighboring solutions. And all numerical methods use information from numerical solutions from neighboring solutions, because they're always on neighboring solutions. They're never on the exact solution, or else they wouldn't be numerical methods. They'd be analytic, exact methods. So this is well known. Explicit methods such as, and now we're moving to the stochastic world, and I'll demonstrate this to you, that such as tau leaping require unreasonably small time steps in order to maintain stability for these kinds of problems. Implicit method, and by the way, chemical kinetics in the deterministic world was, I believe, actually the first application where stiffness was recognized as a problem. And that was Curtis and Hirschfelder in around, I think, before I was born, 1952. I believe. So it's very well known that chemical kinetics is generally one of the big applications for stiff systems arise, and they're very poorly scaled. That poor scaling is a direct result of the stiffness, and which is a direct result of some reactions happening very fast, others happening much more slowly. Okay, now this is also well known in the deterministic world, implicit methods in general don't have step size limitations due to stability. On the other hand, of course, both implicit and explicit methods, their step size is determined and should be determined by accuracy considerations. And what I mean by it's determined by accuracy considerations is, you know, suppose you're watching, you know, you're looking at your solution. Well, in the old days when I was a graduate student and we had 1200 baud modems, I used to, you know, sit and watch my solution literally march across the screen, you know, and you might be like reading a book while it's doing that or something. And you guys are really, you're really out of it. I mean, somebody should have laughed. But anybody, maybe not even Dan laughed. But anyways, so you're watching your solution march across the screen, and if you're, what you're watching is tiny little dots that are on top of each other that you think, why is it making this many dots, you know? Why doesn't it just move across to where I know it's going to go anyway? Then that step size is too small, right? That's more than you probably need for accuracy. So this accuracy thing, well, it partly has to do with how accurate you really need your solution to be, but it's partly a common sense thing, you know? Like, do I really need 10,000 steps to resolve sine of t for one cycle, that sort of thing? Okay, so our contention is that we need an implicit version of tau leaping that's designed for stochastically stiff systems. And by this, I don't mean stiff stochastic differential equations, for which there has been some work. By this, I mean for stiff discrete stochastic systems. Okay, so a stiff example. One day, Dan came to my office, and he had this example, and I loved it so much. I even brought it to class to show the students, because I never thought of stiffness this way. But anyway, back to the decay dimerizing reaction set. This is a plot of reaction propensities. Okay, so these are the propensity functions. They're not the solutions. Against time using SSA. This is exactly the same example that Dan showed, 500,000 reaction events total. Then there's even 2,000 reaction events per dot in this plot. And as you can see, the propensity functions are jumping around quite a bit. But if you look just a tiny bit closer, and if you're not totally wiped out by now, you'll see that this guy down here is really the mirror image of this guy. Okay, and it's, in fact, these two propensities are really sort of working to, this is part of the canceling out process that's inherent in the stiffness. Now, we think we should be able to take really big time steps on this system, even bigger than what Dan showed you. And why do we think that? Because here's a plot of the number of species S1 against time using SSA, and as you can see, after this period, by the way, this little time up until, I don't know where this is, but it's a very small number over here, that's from zero to there is something that we call the transient region, and the solution isn't stiff here because it needs a lot of time steps over here in this region in order to come down here from 100,000 molecules down to 5,000 or wherever it is now. Okay, but over here, you know, we think we ought to be able to, if I saw this marching across my screen with this many dots, I'd be rather displeased, especially since there's one dot for every 2,000 reactions. Okay, same thing with S2 and S3, a big transient over here that's going to require small steps no matter what, and then some nice smooth behavior that ought to be able to be resolved with much bigger time steps. Okay, and that's sort of the hallmark of a stiff problem. I want to show you with just an even simpler problem what happens if we if we apply the explicit tau method to a stiff problem. So here we've just got, what do we call this thing, Dan? Reversible isomerization reaction, yeah. So I just call it S1 goes to S2 and S2 goes back to S1. Anyway, it's a really simple problem. And, pardon? Pardon? Oh, did somebody say, okay. Anyway, so if we use, here's some sample trajectories. So, you know, usually you run an ensemble of trajectories in this kind of a simulation. These are just some sample ones. With step sizes 0.005, that's this nice, relatively nice solution over here. Okay, but if I increase the step size already to 0.009, then we get this, this behavior over here. Okay, and if the step size, this is just right on the border of the what in the deterministic world we'd call the stability region of the method. And we're getting a handle on what all those concepts translate to for discrete stochastic systems. And if you push the step size just a little harder to 0.02, well then the method goes completely unstable. This is 10 to the fifth up here. Okay, so here's what we did about it. So what we wanted, of course, is a method that, like explicit tau leaping, tends to the same method for stochastic differential equations and for ordinary differential equations as we move into a regime that corresponds to those limits. And what happens, okay, so how do we fix this in ordinary differential equations? Well, of course, we take the whole thing implicit, okay? So we evaluate the right-hand side at xn plus 1 instead of at xn. What do we do for stochastic ordinary differential equations, so SDEs? Well, usually it's only the deterministic part in SDEs is taken implicit. There's a great many problems if you take the, which have to do with memory, putting memory into the system that isn't really there, if you take the stochastic term implicit. So what we sort of wanted to do in this discrete stochastic problem simulation is to take the deterministic part implicit while leaving the stochastic part alone, but then we had to figure out what the deterministic part was. And so that's how we came to this idea, okay? So here's the update formula. So xn plus 1 is equal to xn plus, now if we were just doing explicit tau leaping, this would be the update term right here, okay? So what we did was we took the mean of that term. This is the mean of that term, nu tau a, because this is a Poisson, so the mean of it is a tau. We added and subtracted the mean of that term, and then we took the mean that we think that's the deterministic part, implicit. Okay, and now you can look at this over here. If you like to think about SDEs, this here is the stochastic perturbation. Okay, so we just kind of separated out the deterministic part from the stochastic perturbation.
Stochastic perturbation has zero mean.
Right, it has zero mean, yeah. Okay, so this is based on the explicit tau method. Only the mean part is taken implicitly. Reduces to the backward Euler scheme in the SDE and the ODE regimes. It agrees with the SSA in the small step size limit. And it's better suited for stiff problems, we claim. Okay, so here's the implicit tau method applied again to that reversible isomerization reaction. And here's for two step sizes, 0.005, that was the one we had before. And it gives essentially the same answers as the explicit tau method. And here's, remember that 0.02 in that method just completely blew it up. And here's the step size 0.05. We skipped the intermediate step size. And as you can see, it gets a reasonable answer. It's not quite right because that's a pretty big step size. But it's not blowing up and it's qualitatively correct. Okay. Okay. So just with okay. I'm not quite sure off the top of my head. But it's somewhere between 0.009 and 0.02, because that's where we saw the other one blow up. And as I said, we've been developing the theory for that in the discrete stochastic case. So just some concluding remarks. I want to talk a little bit about our goals for tau leaping and multiscale chemical kinetic simulation. First, what I pretty much talked about, but not in a lot of detail, is to understand stiffness, the time, the multiple scales issue in time, how it presents itself in stochastic systems, because I don't think it's a natural concept in discrete stochastic systems, because when you're doing a discrete stochastic simulation, you think in terms of doing one event at a time. And stiffness is an approximation kind of concept. So how does it present itself, and what can we do about it? We presented one way to deal with this, which is make an implicit tau method, and hopefully maybe some higher order methods. But we're also looking at things like discrete quasi-steady state approximations and discrete stochastic partial equilibrium approximations. Step size control, there's a bunch of work that we've done on this that I didn't have time to present. Current algorithms that are based on just strictly on changing in the propensity function don't work that well for stiff systems, and we understand why, and I think we have some good fixes for that. Higher order methods, we're working on this. This is hard. It comes together with this, a firmer theoretical basis for this whole class of methods. Now, we have convergence and order results, so we have part of that firm theoretical basis. We certainly have the convergence and order results for the implicit and the explicit tau methods. So they're not, they may sound like, I think, again, Dan's a very modest person, and I would have certainly not named this tau leaping, because it sounds kind of, ad hoc. I don't know whether it flies with the mathematical community, so, Kevin Burridge and I had a thought about maybe renaming it Poisson Taylor series, Poisson Runge-Kutta framework, that's what it was, yeah. And it sounded a lot more, I don't know about sexy. But, yeah, sounded a lot more mathematical. Anyway, don't think that because it's been presented in a very modest way that we've been neglecting theory because we haven't. But it's very hard. I think there are some very difficult fundamental questions in the theory for these methods that we're just beginning to come to grips with. For example, the mean and the variance don't mean a whole lot if you've got a system that has that's a bistable system and it's jumping in between two states. And really, a question that comes up a lot recently in numerical analysis that not everybody recognizes as a question is what really are you looking for in your solution? Are you just looking for a good, if you were just kind of approaching this without sort of thinking about the problem, I think you'd go, well, I want the mean and the variance to be right, but it may be that I'm more concerned with knowing what fraction of the time the solution, goes to one state versus another or something like that. It's a lot different than getting the mean and the variance right. Okay. Of course, what we have in mind and what we're working towards, I think, fairly rapidly now, is incorporation of this explicit and implicit tau together with stochastic simulation algorithm, chemical Langevin equation, reaction rate equation. Okay, so these things beautifully limit to each other. And of course, what we're seeking is the same sequence of schemes that beautifully limit to each other for approximation schemes, so that we can somewhat intelligently, I hope, decide which parts of a system need to be approximated at which scale, you know? Are there a great many molecules in some reactions that we could do very cheaply with a reaction rate equation? Is there something really important like sigma 32 in the heat shock that we might have to go all the way down to the SSA in order to capture? So I think we're starting to close in on this part, but there's going to be a lot of steps along the way. Thanks. Yeah.
So I was interested. So you treat you don't treat the stochastic part implicitly. Now, if you were integrating a stochastic differential equation, you could do that if you took into account the fact that the implicit version wants to integrate a Stratonovich equation and the implicit one wants to integrate a Newton equation. Is there some way of doing something and accounting for that, sort of adding a different term to kind of get rid of that? Is there some way of doing something similar for these discrete time sort of boson systems or?
I'm not sure that I completely understand your question. So,
I'm just saying that there are methods that treat the stochastic term implicitly. If you're integrating a stochastic differential equation, mm-hmm. You need to take care that you're integrating the equation you think you are, because the implicit method naturally integrates the Stratonovich equation. So what I'm saying is, what would the pros and cons be of attempting to develop a method which treated the noise implicitly as well as the deterministic part?
We don't know that if you, I mean, what you say is right.
Yeah.
You start implicitizing the random part, you start changing the ENSO calculus.
Well, I do not mean that you can, so if you can put in a correction term, basically take your original ENSO equation, convert it to a Stratonovich equation, and then use such an implicit integration scheme. And that will integrate the same stochastic process that you start.
But the
problem would be here when, I mean, so there's a correction of drift, you can calculate it there. But you might, they presumably don't know how to calculate it.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we're nowhere near that far advanced to be able to do that. Another thing that I notice is that the chemical kinetics, you know, has a very special structure where the size of the stochastic term is very closely related to and generally smaller than the size of the deterministic term. So far we're not real worried about taking that part explicit, but I think if that becomes a problem, then we'll certainly look at that. But it's something, what you suggest is something that has to be done a lot, very delicately.